Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome to the Local Edition. It's local news and information, keeping you connected in the Catskills and also Northeast Pennsylvania, where, by the way, at this time, a line of storms, some of them severe, is crossing through the area. And there is a flash flood watch in effect until 2 a.m. Well, jobs report came out right after we talked to James B. Huntington last week. Friday is when the jobs reports come out, and the last Friday is one of those Fridays when that happens. I think it's the first Friday of the month. We'll find out what was in that report from James B. Huntington on Work Shift Live. That's coming up in the second half of the program. But right now, to get us started, as we do every Wednesday, it's time for our local news roundup with reporter Liam Mayo from The River. Reporter Liam, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Jason. How are you?
Good, good. So it's good to have you back on. And I guess we should start with, you say you have an update from a story that we talked about last week, a story we've talked about a few times over the past few months, which is that Skinner's Falls Bridge. What's the latest on that?
Right. So last week's update was that the Damascus Citizens for Sustainability had sent the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation a letter essentially accusing them of not taking public comments into consideration unless they've been submitted via a very specific survey. This past Tuesday, PennDOT got back to the River Reporter. We put in a request for comment from them, and they essentially said that they will be taking public comments into consideration. They talked about the specific language that the Damascus Citizens for Sustainability had pointed out as and had sort of pointed to as potentially indicating that PennDOT wasn't going to consider public comment.
They pointed to language that's their language that they're referring to, right?
Yes. PennDOT specifically said in something they released that they were only taking comments from the survey into account. In what they said to us yesterday, they said that that statement was only meant to apply to that one specific release they did. It was sort of a summary of the comments from the survey, and they were just saying that summary didn't include other comments that they had received. They said they're working on a document to sum up the other comments that they have received, and that, direct quote, comments, regardless of the time they were received, will be reviewed and incorporated as appropriate into a technical document for the study.
Okay, unquote. All right. I wonder if that's going to make the Damascus citizens feel any better.
Well, in a way, it may or it may not. I think it's definitely good to hear from PennDOT that they're intending on doing this, but I think there were concerns before all of this came up about PennDOT not just hearing public comment, but really taking that into heart as they're developing the documents for the Milanville Skinner's Falls Bridge. And I think that broader concern will continue regardless of what PennDOT does to incorporate public comments into
right.
their documentation.
Yeah, and even if this was just a kind of a miscommunication from PennDOT, it's occurring with that whole backdrop of people already kind of being wary of whether or not they're being heard. So
exactly.
You'll continue to keep an eye on what's going on with that bridge for us, right? We'll be able to check in later
yep.
on it, right? Okay.
Absolutely.
Good deal. So, 10 Mile River Scout Camp, big camp out there in the kind of western part of Sullivan County. The Boy Scouts are selling some of the camp. Is that true?
It could be true. So I heard at the most recent meeting of the Upper Delaware Council from Bill Rudge, a natural resources supervisor with the Department of Environmental Conservation, and he was sort of giving a status update on behalf of the DEC, and he said that the DEC has been approached by the Boy Scouts, and the Boy Scouts are looking to use and preserve the land of the 10 Mile River Scout Camp in a way that can generate some revenue for them, which could involve selling that off to the Department of Conservation or some other state agency, or not all of the camp, but certainly parts of it.
Okay. Yeah. And so I guess it's just another story where it's like you got to wait and see if that's what actually happens.
Yeah, it's a bit of a wait and see. It's very early talks, but I think the sort of biggest news from that is that they are planning or considering doing this at all. The scout camp is currently, it's a massive camp. It's, I believe, around 12,000 acres, and it has over 60 miles of hiking trails. And currently, the only trail that is open to the public is, I think, a six-mile trail, the Tustin Mountain Trail, near the 10-mile river access, both of which are maintained in cooperation with the NPS. So if they're considering entering into some kind of partnership to open up more of those lands to public access, that could potentially open up a huge swath of land in a very convenient location for public hiking or for public recreation or for even for camping. So it's a wait and see, but it's a very promising wait and see.
Okay. Well, thank you for being on that one for us. What else are you looking at right now?
Well, we're looking at the legislative meetings from the Sullivan County Legislature, as always. And at one of the most recent public safety committee meetings, Sullivan County District Attorney Megan Galligan sort of complained about understaffing in her department. She said that she has five assistant district attorneys currently, and that owing to COVID and a couple of other things, they've got a case backlog of around 500 and 5,000 cases. She said the office normally handles around 3,000 cases in a year, and it was shut for around 8 months during the pandemic, so all of that kind of built up. In addition, there are kind of two other factors that are leading to that buildup. Violent crimes have been up around 35% this year from last year. I looked for some statistics on violent crime from last year. Apparently, there were 146 violent crime events from last year, so it's up over that. And new state laws have started to require body cameras to be used by police officers, and that creates more work for the district attorney's office because assistant district attorneys need to go through all of that footage when it is compiled in the course of a crime scene, and they need to do that in sort of a timely manner. I think it's 20 days for a case where someone has been incarcerated, or 35 for someone where someone has not been incarcerated.
So that backlog has serious implications beyond just public safety.
Exactly. It could impact justice being done or not being done.
Yeah. So what was there any response, or is it just letting the legislature know and hopefully something will come out of it?
I think it's just letting the legislature know. I don't believe there was any action taken as a result of that, but I guess we're back on the wait-and-see train, where hopefully they'll provide more funding for assistant district attorneys, or that the office will just be able to hire or will be able to find more people interested in applying for jobs that are already open.
Right. And this was at last Thursday's meeting of the legislature, after you and I spoke on Wednesday last week?
September 2.
Did anything come up either on the legislative side or on the public comment side following the story we were talking about last week, where people are complaining that the funds related to COVID relief aren't going to public health initiatives and not enough is being done with those funds? That was the complaint from a number of people that we heard from last week, both on air here and in the pages of the River Reporter. Was anything said about that at Thursday's meeting?
I believe there was something said about that. the SUNY Sullivan president, Jay Quintance, sort of addressed those concerns and sort of the concerns that the funds given to his college for boiler maintenance didn't truly qualify for ARPA funding. He said that the project is critical infrastructure for the county and that it includes improving windows, light fixtures, and other parts of the college buildings that need to be made more energy efficient, and that embarking on such a project could trickle down into the community and help support the local economy. But we also did get more public comments into the River Reporter and in the pages of the River Reporter about that. And something they pointed out was both of those projects were eligible for bonding and sort of had been working their way through the legislative process on their own, both the SUNY Sullivan Boilers Project or Improvements Project and the Roads Project. So even if what SUNY Sullivan President Jay Quintance said, even if those projects are essential and even if those projects will help the local economies, that money could have been found somewhere else and ARPA money could have been used more directly to support local health outcomes.
Right. Okay. So that's an ongoing conversation that the community is having with legislators.
Yeah.
Okay. And just something that I was thinking as you're talking about Jay Quaintance from SUNY Sullivan making those remarks. I mean, SUNY Sullivan was part of the public health response to COVID-19 in terms of, the way that it opened up its doors to the public and also hosted the first major large-scale vaccine clinics that we had in the area, among other things. So that's an interesting point. But, of course, again, that's, well countered by the observation that maybe those funds still were going to come from elsewhere anyway. So
yeah.
Let's keep...
It's absolutely an interesting point, and I don't think... I think this is it is a valuable project, and I think SUNY Sullivan is a valuable institution that should be supported, and I think a lot of the public comments are acknowledging that. And I think what they're more saying... I don't think it's a question of the funds are being spent poorly. I think it's a question of the funds could be being spent better.
Yeah, and more directly to the intent of where the funds came from and the needs that they were attempting to address.
Exactly.
Speaking of addressing needs, in our last couple minutes, suicide prevention in Wayne County, what's that story about?
Right. So there were a couple of... apparently September is Suicide Prevention Month. So there were a couple of stories in this week's River Reporter about Wayne and Pike County and them sort of dealing with it. There was a recent partnership between the National Alliance for Mental Illness of Northeast Pennsylvania and the National Suicide Prevention Initiative of Wayne and Pike. That partnership visited 6 area school districts in Delaware Valley, North Pocono, Wallenpock, Western Wayne, Wayne Highlands, and Forest City, giving presentations before students, talking about mental health and talking about resources in the community for suicide prevention and how those resources could be accessed. And it's a problem that has been worsening in a sense, or at least not been getting too terribly much better. The statistics from Wayne County in 2019, there were 18 suicides. In 2020, there were 11, 5 to date in 2021. Over in Pike County, it's sort of the reverse trend where there were 5 in 2019 and 11 in 2020, but of course, it's a sort of thing where even one is too many. So the work continues, in a sense.
All right. Well, Liam, I want to thank you for going over all this with us, as always, here on a Wednesday. Remind people that the River Reporter, new edition of it, comes out tomorrow, and folks can hear you again right here on these airwaves this weekend as you do our weekend headlines. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
All right. This is a local edition, local news and information. It's keeping you connected here in the Catskills, Northeast Pennsylvania. And again, Leah Mayo from River Reporter keeping us up to date. When we return, it's time for Work Shift Live. James B. Huntington, don't go anywhere.
If you hear good music, you're listening to Radio Catskill, like our local DJ shows on Friday night. Jason Tugaw makes you a personalized mixtape at 7, Cassie Carlson at 8 on Rare Pair Radio. At 9, it's freeform DJ John F. on Low Stakes, Jeff Loeffler down in the deep end at 10, and Stay Up for Jewel Heist with Austin Bros at midnight. Friday night on Radio Catskill.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, 20 years ago, the events of September 11th shocked the world and forever changed life in the U.S., including the future of immigration in this country.
And I remember paying attention to that because I still had a little bit of hope that I was going to travel to D.C. So there was that sense of like postponement and we're just like waiting for things to get back to normal.
That's this week on Latino USA.
Friday afternoon at 2 on Radio Catskill.
Okay, right now on the local edition, it's time once again for the latest on jobs and the economy around the country and around our listening area. And for that, we turn to James B. Huntington with Work Shift Live. Hello, James.
Good evening, Jason. Good evening, listeners.
Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living.
Okay, if I'm, unless I'm counting wrong, Jim, this is, September 8th, that means last Friday was the first Friday of the month. Does that mean fresh jobs numbers coming out?
It certainly did this time, yes, yes. It was sort of a controversial report, but controversial between what I saw and what other people saw. What the consensus was, not getting any further than the most disappointing thing in it, which is only 235,000 net new non-farm payroll positions, which was a real drop-off from what was expected, about one-third, less than one-third of the consensus and less than a quarter of what it was before. But a lot of other things, or I should say one thing, happened that drove a lot of changes otherwise. And that was 2.2 million people left the labor force. That is a huge number for 1 month. We have that many more people saying that they are not interested in work. It's now 94 million. It was 91.8 last time. So that ended up pulling a lot of people out of many other statuses. So actually, it turned out that latent demand for jobs, as shown by the AJSN, was down, considerably down, 1.2 million. So it looked a lot better, and that was also reflected in lower unemployment rates, and a lot of things just decreased. The total number of jobless, the total number out for 27 weeks or longer, and both unadjusted and adjusted unemployment rates were down substantial amounts. So really it was not a bad month. It was a kind of a consolidation thing where a lot of people who got in the labor force in June or July and couldn't find what they wanted ended up leaving it. So we'll see where we go from here. It should be dramatically different with the big news of the last week, which is the end of the federal extra unemployment benefits.
So that you think that might further change these numbers? I just want to make sure I'm hearing this right. Are you saying that that the number of jobs added to the workforce is essentially 10% of the number of people that left the workforce altogether?
How do you get that?
You say like 2.2? Did you say 2.2 million?
Oh, 2.2 million people have left the workforce.
The workforce, but it was only 200 and...
200 and some thousand new jobs. So in a sense, you could say that only a tenth of those people were able to find work. Although there's a real gap, getting to be a big gap between jobs that are available, and there still are lots of them on paper anyway, people want to work at.
And what they're willing to do. So what's going on with work in our listening area, in Sullivan, Orange County, and people looking for work?
Yeah, we have some real changes. A piece that came out, apparently, yes, talking with the Orange County Chamber of Commerce CEO, we're seeing that during the pandemic, a lot more than just tourism and hospitality were affected, many other things. It is coming back. It's starting to come back slowly, moderately. We have some businesses offering bonuses. We have a lot of growth and a lot of opportunities at United Natural Foods Incorporated, which has a distribution center in Montgomery. They're offering as much as $6,000 as a sign-in bonus. They're looking for examples. They have here order selectors, lift operators, receivers, and loaders. And those are good jobs, really. So that's something to think about. And they are short what they have, if you were willing to go out to Montgomery, which is not that far. So then there's the same controversy about what kind of labor shortage there is. I've weighed in on that before. There are the agency, the Sullivan County Center for Workforce Development, has positions that are open for also good jobs, electricians, carpenters, certified nursing assistants, internet technology specialists. There are positions like that right here in Sullivan County. So it is growing, especially if you just lost your unemployment and really need to get out there. Check these things out, because you should be able to land a job right here with a reasonable commute.
Yeah, I was going to say, people from Sullivan County have been known to commute much further than Montgomery for jobs.
Yeah.
And looking more widely at the state, what's up with this number of New Yorkers, 800,000 New Yorkers? What happened to them?
Wow. I was surprised, because that's what the headline said, and it turns out that's the number from New York City alone. So there are probably 400,000 or 500,000 otherwise. This is the end of the extra federal unemployment.
By the way, on Labor Day, we spoke to a lawyer who's basically an advocate for labor. Specifically about this happening, and he went through a number of options that could still be taken at the state level to make up for this. But this is something we were covering Monday night here on the Local Edition. What's your take on this?
Well, in any event, there's going to be a gap between anything like that actually gets put together. It is a natural thing to happen. People who are fully vaccinated, and almost everyone really should be at this point, who's old enough to work, we have a lot of opportunities. There are some real disconnects between the jobs that are officially available, because often they pay too little, and that's why they're still out there, and they're in the same different areas. But there are a lot of positions that don't require a lot. We're also getting a great easing up on degrees and experience requirements that have been around probably for too long, in a sense really there to cut down the number of applicants. So we have a lot of people looking for work, but there are opportunities. So I think what it really has to be is people have to find something and go from there. It may not last a long time. Employers also will not be as fussy about thinking that people they hire have to be staying there for life or are good candidates for that. They really need bodies to do things that they don't have anyone to do right now. So my strong recommendation is that everyone who needs to work find a job of some sort. You can probably upgrade from there, but you'll also find that pay for these things is higher than you might expect, because that's something they're grudgingly, grouchily doing, is raising pay enough to get people there.
Yeah, at the very least, pay might be a little more than it used to be for that same sort of job. But as you say, like a bulk of these folks coming off unemployment are in New York City. And you know, and I grew up here in upstate, you know, so the city was often a place where you think, boy, there's no work here, go to the city. This is totally armchair. I have nothing to back this up, but one of the things I'm concerned about for the folks in the city is that there's so many things that people used to be able to find work easily doing in the city that have been so dramatically impacted by the pandemic. I mean, I've just heard reports from folks I know anecdotally in New York City talking about whole areas where, you know, restaurants and service industry, so many of those businesses have closed. I almost wonder if it's a hindrance to be in the city looking for work right now.
I don't think so. I think there are a lot of positions available. I think you need to go to other neighborhoods. There are restaurants reopening. There will be more. A lot of the shortened hours and such things that have cut back the number of workers at restaurants and other hospitality things is because of a lack of workers. So as they're able to hire, they can expand somewhat. So I would not give up on that at all. Instead of focusing on ones that have closed, look at the ones that are open, because there are help wanted signs all over the place.
You may not
get paid what you want, and you may not get paid what your previous career has been consistent with, but it will be a lot better than not making anything.
Right,
and I don't think there's going to be any stigma, any negative thought of, well, he's not suited to being an engineer because he worked 2 years in a restaurant. I don't think there's any nonsense like that going to be going around now. I mean, employers have always, to some extent, respected people who worked anywhere they could to keep things going until they could get back in their careers.
And moreover, I mean, anybody's looking at somebody's resume that has something like that, that might seem a little out of place. All they have to do is look at what years that happened. I mean, everybody's going to know what 2020 and 2021 were like for people.
There are a lot of people who are not doing that. There are people who have blank resumes for the last year or something, and it doesn't have to be that way. Do something.
All right. So Workshift Live, talk about jobs in the economy. And the theme on this episode is get some jobs for the economy.
Yes, they're out
there. Do some work.
It will really help everything if we match up better the applicants and the jobs. We can do a lot better than the disconnect we have now.
Okay, well, in our last minute here before we go, this is piquing my interest here. You left me a little note that there's an ancient standard for being hired that is starting to disappear. And anytime, well, if it's ancient, I take an interest. So what is it?
Yes. The title on this piece from the Times Herald Record was "No Degree, No Experience, No Problem." I happened to mention that before, where both of those things have been around really mainly to cut the number of applicants. They have progressively wanted more and more degrees, especially for business positions. If you have parents or grandparents, they may tell you how many people in the 50s and 60s and earlier went directly from high school to working for a business. They didn't need degrees. Now they're starting to remove the requirements that have popped up to thin out the number of people looking for jobs. And experience, well, 80% of jobs can be learned within 3 weeks. And they're realizing that and going back to that.
All right. Well, we're going to have to get going. But, James, I want to thank you so much for once again joining us. Will you be back next week?
Yes, I will.
All right. Workshift Live. Thank you. Okay, that's going to do it for the local edition, local news and information that's keeping you connected here in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania. We'll be back again tomorrow, and James B. Huntington, he'll be back next week with more Workshift Live.
your NPR station for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania.